chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, we're in a time of economic troubles, and maybe that's the reason we called the former Orange County economic developer, Ted Abernathy. He's moved on to greater things. He's now the executive director of the Southern Growth Policy Board, which is a think tank, which does all kinds of things, including providing economic development research and advice for at least 13 states, southern states. And Ted, we remember when you were giving us economic development advice and watching over the economic situation in Orange County. We're proud that we taught you enough that you can move on to help now 13 states, 13 governors. But yeah. Welcome back.
Thank you, DG. I'm sorry I didn't know everything back then that I think I know now. So maybe we can continue to bring some
back. Probably you learned a lot of things that are still helping you. I mean, are there fundamentals that that carry over from advising and trying to help a small county, a small but unusual county in its economic development, that carry over into helping a 13-state region with its economic challenges?
Yeah, I've been lucky enough over the last, I think I was telling you earlier, that 35 years ago this month, I came to Chapel Hill as an undergrad, and I've been in the business world now doing economic development for about 30 years and been able to work in big cities and small cities and counties and regions and now for multiple states. And it does all get back to some basic fundamentals, but it does so with really rapidly changing times. And I think that's the hard part for everyone now, is to try to get a handle on, you know, is the ground uneven under our feet? But communities have always been successful if they had good leadership, if they looked to the future, if they worked on fundamentals like having good labor pools and good cost of doing business, if they understood what it was that made them special. And that's true of cities and states and everything. And so there are a lot of very similar things.
A lot of people it's not fair to call them conservatives, because that's not the right term. I guess more libertarian believe that economic development takes place almost entirely as a result of the entrepreneurship and the private enterprise incentives that develop in the market, and that the ideas that you would come in and try to mess up that efficient marketplace by having the government reward right. people or give special rewards. You work in a region where that way of thinking is maybe stronger than in other parts of the country. Is it a factor in what you do?
Yeah, libertarianism, I mean, certainly New England has very strong roots in that, and the West does too, but the South does now more than ever. I think for those people who feel strongly one way or another, I think the old joke about if you laid all the economists in the world end to end, you'd never reach a conclusion is probably true. And on almost any economic issue, economics is like a lot of things. People disagree vehemently on what should happen. More interesting lately, I think, is that globally, as we compete more with different countries around the world, we're doing so by playing by different rules. In America, we have a set of rules that we're arguing about. More conservative, more liberal points of view are arguing about those rules. But if we compare capitalism in the U.S. to capitalism in Europe, it doesn't look very similar. If you compare it to what Russia claims they're doing with capitalism, they're playing by a different set of rules. China's playing by a different set of rules. India's playing. So everybody's playing capitalism together, but they're playing by different rules. And if you thought that, if you made that a soccer match and everybody got to play by their own rules, it'd be an interesting world.
Give an example of difference in
sure.
rules. I think, well, you better tell me what my rules are, because what I think might be our rules might be something different
well, sure.
from what it really is.
Sure.
And
America doesn't do pure capitalism either. I mean, we have rules and regulations, and we support industries, and we have, you know, farm subsidies, or we have guarantees. And so everybody's a little different. But as an example, the one that gets the most discussion, I think, in America is Chinese intellectual property rules, where they believe that intellectual property is about proving an idea, not proving a concept. Here you can't get a patent until you can actually do something. In China, you can get a patent on the idea. And so those become really different rules. Mm. In Russia, you have oligarchy capitalism, where the state is involved closely with private individuals running companies. In Saudi Arabia, it might be that the state itself runs a company, or in China, that the banking or construction or oil industries are part state-owned, are heavily invested in. In Europe, there might be a greater safety net. They're all playing by different rules, and each of those means that as we compete, that we have to do so with sort of one eye on the rule book and one eye on the competition. And it makes it even more interesting when you consider that most of the companies that are the innovative big companies in America are doing business in all these places. And so you end up with these multinationals that are, you know, like a Coca-Cola doing 80% of its business outside the U.S., playing by everybody else's rules, but also playing by our rules.
Are the rules, it would be my impression from listening to you that the describing a little bit about what the rules might be in other countries, that in the U.S., bound as we are in government participation and interference with the right. market system, that we nevertheless are closer to pure – we're not pure capitalism. We're closer to it than the other systems that you described.
Yeah, people say if you want to see pure capitalism, you go to the night markets in Asian countries and just walk down the streets right. and everybody's willing to cut a deal on everything. But yes, we try hard in America not to pick industries, not to support one business over another. So we're closer. And what makes it harder, of course, is that other people aren't. So in America, we try to, you know, try not to underpin.
I want to pursue this a little bit, because it seems to make it harder when we are involved in a business that is being subsidized by some other country in that country. But overall, wouldn't even those of us who tilt left, wouldn't we say we're stronger because we don't do so much of that, and because we require people to rely on the market, even when somebody else is breaking our rules someplace else, we stand up to it. We make sure that it works, and we don't get involved in these subsidies to compete with other subsidies.
For those of you who would lean left, then the answer would be sure, except that you want to make sure that those countries have labor laws that are similar to yours, or that have environmental protections that are similar to yours, or that we can just keep going down the list. So you'd also like for other countries to play by rules that fit your eye, what it is you mm-hmm. think capitalism means. And so some other people might say, a libertarian or more conservative point of view might say that, well, we shouldn't have those laws because that's interference with the market system also. So both political sides have parts of the free market system that they would argue aren't being done fairly around the globe. The thing we know for sure is they're being done more often around the world. Where capitalism, in whatever form it's currently in, and certainly you wouldn't argue that, for instance, Russia was pure capitalism, but Russian companies compete with German companies and American companies and French companies all around the world for contracts and other things. So this is a messy time as we have more globalization, and yet we're all trying to sort out what the next set of rules are. And it's not just we're doing that with even governments. I mean, what are the rules on governments interfering with each other's governments? This becomes a great big hodgepodge, and we're all trying to find our way through it.
Well, how does that translate into providing, as you do, Ted Abernathy, in providing advice to the 13 Southern states who are part of your organization, Southern Growth Policy Board, and you're trying, and they're paying you, or they're sustaining your organization to provide valuable economic advice and counseling. And so, what is there to? I mean, what kind of advice can you give to help?
Well, we do get some of our money from state dues. We get a lot more from foundation and contracts. But if we're looking at what sectors are growing, what clusters is the popular economic development term. So if you're trying to make the supply chains for automotive work better in the South, or the emerging aerospace industry, or advanced materials, then trying to understand good cluster theory and how do you get the supply chains to work, what infrastructure does that take, what research does it take at local universities? Those would be the type of things we might help with.
So you'd say the fundamental principle these days is let's find little existing clusters that are working and help them work better and help see where they might work in an expanded way, not to try to create things so much that some professor might think.
Well, North Carolina has a long history. I mean, we would be argued today as one of the top biotech states in the country. When Burroughs first went to Research Triangle Park in the early 70s, not only had no one ever heard the term biotech probably, but the entire pharmaceutical chemical industry was new. That was a different thing, and that sort of began a seeding process that Glaxo came along, the state invested in a biotech center, more contract research organizations formed, the whole hundreds now of companies that make up the biotechnology cluster in North Carolina. Along the way, the state invested some money, the federal government through EPA and NIHS invested money, the community college system created programs to underpin it. That's the true long-term way to build over a 30-year period a deep, meaningful cluster that provides jobs, opportunity, and wealth to a community. That's happening in some of our southern states around aerospace. It's happened in some of our southern states around Huntsville has a rocketry, space flight thing. Other parts of the South are built in other clusters. And so if you don't have one, then starting from scratch is possible but expensive and takes a long time. But if you have a small one that you're trying to build up, and North Carolina's aerospace industry is a good example of that, or if you're looking at alternative energy, whether it's a wind energy cluster or something else, then what are the things you can do to build that cluster and sustain it? What do you invest in human capital? Do you invest in financial capital? What type of regulatory requirement?
Can
do that. I mean, the government could.
Who are the potential investors?
It's a mix. The government certainly could, but if Duke University decides they're going to offer a program, that's not the government providing it. Or if venture capitalists decide to set up offices that are focused on alternative energy in North Carolina, that's not the government doing it. The government may have a role, but it might be chambers of commerce that get involved. It might be big business community. It might be a civic league who gets there. You do need catalyst. You need a catalyst.
Need somebody or something to come in and stir this pot.
That's right.
We're stirring the pot so good. We need to take a break. I'm visiting with Ted Abernathy, who's the former economic development officer for Orange County. Now he's the executive director of the Southern Growth Policy Board. He and I will be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Ted Abernathy. Ted, I like to think of him still as my local, close-by friend who gives economic development advice and perspective for Orange County. But you've been gone a long time from that work. Now working throughout the South with a base in Raleigh, with a base in the Research Triangle Park as the executive director of the Southern Growth Policy Board. How do you describe it? I mean, one of you, a think tank, but that's not really is it? What are you?
Let me give you a tiny bit of history. The Southern Growth Policy Board was created 40 years ago. It was Terry Sanford's idea, and Governor Sanford had quit being governor and was then the president of Duke University and took a train trip to New York City, and he passed through New Jersey, and he didn't think it was very pretty. And he came back and he said, southern states are going to grow. This is 1971. Southern states are going to grow a lot over the coming decades. And we need a nonpartisan group to help us think about how we're going to grow and what are the things we're going to do. And Southern Growth got born out of that and ended up talking about what do we do after the factories. It's interesting. Almost 30 years ago, we started writing materials about what do we do when we lose the low-end factory jobs. And, it sort of seems like it was just yesterday that happened in North Carolina around the South. So Southern Growth has become over the years a place, a collaboration place where southern states can get together across state lines and work together on issues. It's become a place for resources across political boundaries. You know, in 1971, there were not a lot of Republican governors running around the South. Today, predominant Republican governors. But we still have to work together on issues that impact the South, whether that is making sure the South continues to have ports and rail and interstate highways that allow us to move goods and services. Whether it's about the South having energy, whether it's about the South continuing to grow with jobs, or even smart growth, beautification, arts, those kind of things. We work on a lot of those collaborative models. But when I'm pushed, I tell people that public policy is all about making choice, and Southern Growth's job is to inform those choices.
Now, how do you do that? You're headquartered in the Research Triangle Park.
We are.
You've got a cast of thousands working for you?
No, by yourself at night? No, we have a small staff of about 10 people, and we also have a group of boards and commissions spread all across the South with people in universities and state policy advisors and state technology people and business people. And there's about 400 of those such people around the South who help us do webinars.
They work
policy
for you
people.
Either as volunteers or as contract.
Volunteers. We pay very few of them. We try hard not to pay too many of them in these times. But they work with us to try to come up with ideas, spread the word.
I mean, these guys would have to have worked someplace. They'd be faculty members.
Some are faculty members. We work with all the public service organizations in the universities across the South. We work with all of the state science advisors. We work with the people who do ag and forestry across the South. The idea is to bring the best ideas forward and try to help our public policy officials, if you will, just see around the next corner. What's coming up over the hill?
All that's so fascinating. But even more fascinating to me is what you all are thinking. I mean, what are the challenges, the problems, those kinds of things that you see as facing the southern region, either as problems that have got to be solved, as challenges, or as opportunities what are some of the things that we I'm asking a long question and I'm going to let you
talk. You're asking a lot of questions.
And then the things that we think we know that you've kind of found out that we know wrong.
Let's start with what we do know. And I mean, there are some long-term trends. People say, how do you see the future? And we're not astrologists. We don't sort of throw darts at a wall. What we look at is long-term trends. And so we know some long-term trends. We know the world is globalizing faster than it ever has. And, you know, it's fun to look at graphs and see that the last time that America had a trade surplus was in the mid-70s when almost nobody was trading. And now, you know, it's 100 times that amount of trade. We know what part of the world economies are growing and which aren't. We know that we're urbanizing faster than any time in history, that more than half the people on the planet now live in cities, metro areas, and that by the year 2025, it'll be almost 70%, that almost all the growth in the world is in urban areas. We know that the level of expertise needed by the average citizen to compete in the world continues to rise. You know, when my grandparents from North Carolina, you know, sixth grade education was enough. By my parents, it was a high school. By me, you know, my parents thought I ought to go to college to try to compete. And it keeps rising, and we know that. We know that there are more millennium generation kids coming into the workforce. Millenniums are born between 1980 and 2000. That group is bigger than the baby boomer group. I mean, it's a huge, it's 80 million of those kids, and they come in today with a technological and global focus that we didn't have. So we know that there are things that are changing in the world. We know that things are speeding up. We know things are digitizing. So we know all of that is happening, and that's part of the field that we're having to compete in. What we don't know and what we're beginning to question is all those things we used to think were true as we were growing up in the southern states. Are they still true? Is education still the path to prosperity? My answer is yes, but you know, we know that jobs in the future are going to require more skills. Most of the estimates today say that somewhere between 30% and 40% of the jobs are going to need a 4-year college degree. But about 50% of the jobs are going to need something that is at least high school plus, not a college degree necessarily, but a 2-year degree, an apprenticeship program, an advanced training program, something. And we know that a lot of those jobs today, American businesses can't find. We know that manufacturing has declined in America as a percent of the jobs. Yet at the same time, we know our manufacturers can't find enough workers. And if we ask parents in America, do they want their kids to grow up to go into manufacturing, the number is actually less than the jobs we have in manufacturing. So we know that we have a problem there. We know that productivity has taken some of those jobs, globalization, in other words. But should we be telling our kids to go to school? Sure. Should we be telling them to get more jobs? Yes. Should we be telling them to go to school and study, and you pick whichever subject you'd like to insult, but go to that subject because there might not be jobs there? Should they all be engineers? Should they all be in the STEM? We need more people in science, technology, engineering, math than we have, but how many? Do we have enough teachers? Do we have enough nurses? Do we have enough whatever? Do we have too many? Again, I'm not going to insult any field, but we have too many of these degrees. So we know that's a question. We've always heard what's good for business is good for America. And yet last year in America, the unemployment rate didn't change much, and businesses had the highest profits of any time in their history. I'm not begrudging business those high profits, but does that mean that we've broken that connection? Is it maybe that since business is globalized so much that it's good for the world because the last 10 years more people have come out of poverty than in any time in global history, and yet America seems to be struggling? So is that a broken promise? We know that communities are more and more non-geographic. That who we deal with on a regular basis is not necessarily our neighbor. It might be that person at the end of that email or Facebook page or global work setting. And so as Southerners who are steeped in place, that's so much a part of who we are is place. Well, how do we become stewards of that place and yet recognize that our world is more than that place or different from that place? And so we're questioning those issues. One that everybody questions is where the job's coming from.
Well, we need to take a break. But gosh, so many things. I told you I wouldn't interrupt you while you answered the question, but you could have answered that question on into the midnight.
Yep.
Rob, and we're visiting with Ted Abernathy. We're talking about economic development because in his role as executive director of the Southern Growth Policy Board, one of the things that he's got to do is provide practical economic advice and counsel and opportunities for the folks who are in charge in 13 southern states. He and I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with DG Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin. Ted Abernathy is my guest. If that name sounds familiar, it's because he used to be in charge. Well, he used to help us. He was our servant as the economic development officer for Orange County. Right now, he's got a bigger job.
It's just a broader job.
13 southern states as the executive director of the Southern Growth Policy Board. And Ted, before I interrupted you to take the break, you were answering this long question that I gave you, which I can't even remember, but essentially was what's different. And you've outlined enough to make me want to say, okay, you've told us some of the things that are different. Great. Professor could have done that, but you are charged with providing practical advice. And so what, based on these changing circumstances, what are some of the things we can do or that we ought to do that we must do?
Well, communities that are successful or competitively successful, quite simply, DG, when we talk to communities all across the South, we say, draw a circle or a line around your community and measure the money that goes in versus the money that goes out. And you get to determine how successful your economy is. And so what we try to do is look at where communities—
Let's
do Chapel Hill.
Right.
Chapel Hill, money comes into Chapel Hill from tuition, from people all around the state and around the country. Money comes into the hospital here from people who are both in the community but also from outside the community and gets to stay here. People come to a basketball game or a football game and leave their money here. A tourist commits, they leave money. People here some of their money they spend here. Some they may go shop somewhere else. They may go to New York for a show. So you measure the money in and out. And a successful community understands where its money comes from, where money goes. You try to plug those holes if you're leaking money, whether it's retail sales dollars or other things. And you try to enhance those things that bring money into a community. Chapel Hill and the Carrboro area being a little smaller is easier to see that, but that's true of every big community too. It's true of our region. So when you're trying to look at a community, we start with what's driving it. Where are the drivers? What are the impacts of those?
And why are you doing that?
Because that's how you measure economic.
So you measure that, and then you got the measurements, and you say, okay, we're a big draw in Chapel Hill from medicine, from the university, from athletic events. So, okay, now you've told me that. So what? I knew that.
Good.
I never charted it, but I knew that. What difference does that make, and how does that help you do better?
Well, from a policy standpoint, let's say UNC Hospital decided to build a new hospital, but they decided to build it in Raleigh. Now, all of a sudden, the money doesn't come here. It goes somewhere else. Or let's say that you decide that you're going to build this new development or that new development, and it's here versus somewhere else, then you understand where the money comes from. Let's say that UNC Chapel Hill decides that it's going to do online courses for 50% of its students in the year 2030. Well, that starts changing the dynamics of a local community, and then you have to start making public policy decisions on how that is going to impact you. If you're the state of North Carolina, you can have simple issues like whether or not you're going to attract research dollars from the federal government, but also North Carolina farmers in eastern North Carolina, as they export overseas, then they get to bring money into the state that's not our state trading its own money. That's real money from outside the state. Or if you have a headquarters like Bank of America in Charlotte, you get to bring people's, you know, that whatever 0.2% on top of your deposits gets to come and reside in our state. So what you're trying to do with those measurements is drive what you spend your public policy on and how you regulate public
businesses.
So is
businesses. You look at your drivers, mm-hmm. and you say, hey, these are making money for us, so We should
enhance them, or add to them, or protect them.
Work first. Is it fair to say that you would say the doctor says first do no harm? You'd say
yes.
As an economic development officer, you'd say first build on your strengths.
Absolutely. First know your strengths.
Second, build on
your strengths.
Now, what is the that wouldn't be necessary if I'm the economic development officer mm-hmm. of Orange County, mm-hmm. brainy power that I am.
Go for
I would
it.
Say yeah. You know, what we really need to do is we need to get a airplane manufacturing factory
right.
here. Or we like somebody else did, or we need to get
right.
A big box store here
right.
or something like that. I mean,
that would be known as transactional economic development, and those might be things that would be good. But let's say you wanted a big box store. Would you want it because you thought you were losing money to other places
yes.
with big box
yes.
stores?
Yeah.
Well, then you might want to do that. Or you might want to change behaviors, or you might want to do something else. If you were sitting out in the middle of the plains of Iowa and you had 100 people in your community and plenty of small businesses, would you need a big box store? No, because all your money's captured. So here what you would be doing is addressing a perceived need that money was going outside.
So that might be good. That might be you wouldn't laugh at that.
Not necessarily. But I might also say, well, the other thing I could do is I could have an enhanced Southern Seasons where people from all over the country would send their mail order checks to me, and I might get to keep that money in my community.
There are lots of that. Yeah. No, I mean, I love that. I mean, that's because that goes back to what you're telling me to do is to identify your strengths and
yes.
build on them. So how does the community, mm-hmm. when it's got a private business that's operating and it turns out pretty much due to the efforts of the entrepreneurs and maybe in spite of public policy has become such a great success, all of a sudden the public says, hey, we need to build on this strength.
Mm-hmm.
And we go to the owner and say, hey, you need to be bigger. But what does the public, either the government, the Chamber of Commerce, the other entities, the university, what do they do when they see this to help build on the strengths of some of private enterprise.
Yeah, you certainly don't do things to people. You do things for or with people. And so if you've identified something, you test it against the private sector, who's where the business is, or if it's government. I mean, certainly in this community, the university and the hospital make up a large percent of the workforce, so you might be doing something with them too. But you go, you test the hypothesis you've come up with while you're sitting around having your dinner party, and you say, hey, this is a good idea. And you ask, and if they say, yeah, that's a good idea, but here are the roadblocks to that. We couldn't do that because there's no land, or there's no zoning, or there's no capital, or I'm old and I don't want to do this anymore, whatever it is. And if the answer is, well, then let me find you a partner, let me find you some capital, then that's what happens. Chambers of Commerce here, I know that Aaron in the Chamber in Chapel Hill, or Margaret in Hillsborough, what they do is talk to their members and say, what is it that's preventing you from growing? What is it that's hurting you or making you shrink? How can I fix that? And sometimes you can't. Sometimes it's, you know, it's cheaper to make stuff in, you know, Vietnam, and I'm just hurt by that. But sometimes it's, well, there's this rule that might need changing, or there's this competition, or if I had enough money, I could merge or expand or whatever. And you try to identify that. That's the micro level of trying to do economic development. And in the community level, it is very much about personal relationships, transactions at the local level.
Well, that's exciting. Let's take a break and then come back and talk about how it's different, if at all, in terms of doing this on a regional basis.
Sure.
We're visiting with Ted Abernathy, who knows about Orange County development. Economic development, because he's in charge there, and he knows about the southern region because he's now in charge of as executive director of the Southern Growth Policy Board. He and I will be right back to talk about things that can help us region-wise.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with DG Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin. Ted Abernathy, who's the former Orange County Development Officer, is now the Executive Director of the Southern Growth Policy Board. And in the earlier segment, Ted, we were talking about sort of a kinds of things that Chapel Hill could do to enhance its the process it might take to grow economically or have an economic development plan. But now, if you're worried about the southern region, particularly in economic times, how do you translate that sort of way of thinking, that is identifying strengths in particular places and building on those strengths? How do you identify that, and how do you put that into place region-wide?
You look at the same general thing in the South. For instance, if we look at southern states, we're really good at university research. We're actually at the national average, slightly above, in attracting university research
region-wide.
We're terrible at industry research. We're actually a third of the national average at industry research. We need more companies to put their R&D centers in the South. And so you would try to attract the R&D centers back into the South. If you look at educational attainment levels in the South and testing, South falls behind the nation again in the level of educational.
So the legacy of being a poor region is still there.
It's still there. We still haven't got over that hump. In fact, a lot of people would say over the last 20 years we've been treading water there. And we've been getting a little better, but the world's been getting better a little bit faster than us. So you look at those things, capacity to export. We look at ports and airports and infrastructure. You look at the whole region in terms of those kind of things. And then you look in terms of opportunity at the clusters that are emerging in the South. You try to strengthen those.
So clusters that are emerging.
Right. Aerospace is a great example. But with GE Aerospace in North Carolina, or Spirit, or Boeing coming into South Carolina, or Rolls-Royce in Virginia, just like the auto industry started putting auto plants and suppliers started growing up around it about 20 years ago in the South, over the last 10 years, aerospace has continued to become a part of the southern region, and jobs have begun to move here. So how do you build that? If it's just Boeing in South Carolina, that's great for Charleston, big number of jobs, but what about the supplier base? How do they, what about the logistics base? Where do they get their trained employees? Where do they get the people with aerospace engineers in engineering degrees? So those are the kind of things you look at overall in the South, whether it's logistics, which is bigger in the western part of the South. How do you How do you make sure that the roads and the trucking and those kind of things work as well as they can to, you know, it's called eliminating the friction in the economy so that things move and things can be as important. So you look at those same general kind of things. There are certainly some big pictures, legacies, as you just mentioned in the South, around education, around poverty, around inequity. There are also parts of the South that are, you know, the Appalachian region is still hard to find a flat spot to put a job. You know, it's hard to get around. There are places where it's hard to get water and sewer to, or electricity's more expensive or less expensive. All those things are issues that you look at across the region.
Well, and then what do you do? It seems to me that the most controversial thing that I hear about that people are pulling their hair out is the financial incentives that governments give to industry or to new businesses or to expanding businesses, and that there seems to be a whole lot of resources in a competitive spirit that if you were really the dictator, you might say it would just be better if we were putting this money into infrastructure that would support any business that might be here. How is that impacting your job?
Sure. The incentive question is always a really hard question, and it's hard for economic development professionals. So let's make you dictator. So you're going to decide, I guess, that no states give incentives against each other so that it's not even. But we need to make you global dictator, because if China or Mexico or Brazil or someone else is giving incentives, then you eliminating our incentive
out of... I don't want to interrupt you about that.
Yeah,
but the
sure,
argument
John.
Would be that if I'm dictator over a
the
big
world.
Enough area, then what I'm doing is carefully applying the resources that I've got towards building a very good general place for business to thrive. And I'm not going to pay anybody extra to come, but
okay.
I'm going to say, everybody take a look at this, because what I've got for you for free may be better, even when you put the special purchase incentive. And that's over a long time, that I might be able to compete with that. I mean, are these arguments taking place within the development community, or
yes.
does everybody just say no?
The arguments have been taking place, I think, for 30 years in the development community. The answer, if you keep going down the rabbit hole in this one, then you get to, okay, so then you've made the Research Triangle region no incentives but a great place.
Yeah.
So how do some of the communities in North Carolina, which aren't quite as great, and oh, by the way, we've got the University of North Carolina and NC State. Now, those are incentives for business, and we've funded those. And there are interstate highways here, and we funded those. And so there are incentives on the human capital side. There are incentives on the physical side. What about those places in North Carolina that don't have those incentives? And so it's a rabbit hole, and it's circular, DG. I wish that there was a good answer to it. I don't think there's ever anybody who wants to give away anything.
Well, what I'm hearing is that you politically, you just can't say, since every southern state's given these incentives and you're working
right.
with these people, you can't come out very strongly and say, hey, you shouldn't be doing this. You've got to say you are doing it, so let's see how that works overall.
Yeah, I'm more of a pragmatist than an idealist when it comes to this. I think that, yes, not only are most southern states doing it, most southern communities are doing it, and almost every country is doing it. So it's the game. You may not like the game, but if you want to engage in it and you want to try to win it, then you've got to find whatever's comfortable for you. When I used to do seminars for city managers at the School of Government here, I would always say that if I've got $5 and I hold it up and you've got $1, do you want to trade? And the answer would be yes. And so if you know the deal's a good deal, then it's a good deal. But if I've got something hidden in my pocket and you've got a dollar, you know, is that worth it to you? And the answer ought to be no, because you're not going to risk public money on that. Then the final one becomes, if you've got a buck and I'll shine your shoes, is what I'm doing for you, even if it's not financially the best thing for you, are the jobs worth it? Is the whatever? And that's the way I look at the decisions. Rather, I've not ever been in the political world to be able to be ideological. It's usually been transactional to me.
Well, but it seems to me that the tough thing for you, providing general economic advice and trying to develop strategies that benefit everybody across the region, is that then you got a bunch of players, all of whom you're helping, but they're competing against each other and in a very competitive way.
Well, and it's harder. I mean, should they all cut their corporate income tax? Should everybody have the same corporate income tax? Should everybody have the same state income tax? Is it fair for Texas to have no income tax or Florida to have no income tax? And what's fair about that? And, oh, by the way, Texas gets to do it because they have oil and gas revenue. And I mean, you end up with a lot of these questions that states are not equal. They're not all created equal. And they compete the best they can.
Well, it gets back to what you said earlier, and that is that you can't have all the strengths. What you've got to do mm-hmm. better is to identify what your strengths are. And so, that I mean, it seems to me that's what the focus is. Don't cry about Texas having oil revenues. Mm-hmm. What are the strengths that you've got and enhance them?
Yeah, and I think that to your point before, to support your side of this argument.
Good. I need some help because you're beating me.
No. To support your side of the argument, very few of the transactions that happen in economic development have incentives involved in them that are direct cash incentives. Mm-hmm. They all have incentives on whether or not we've done a good job educating kids or built good roads or have a good regulatory, they all have those. But very few of them have the we'll give a tax rebate for this, or we'll give a whatever around the South. Every state's doing it, but they're doing it in pretty small amounts. And they're doing it, hopefully, on high-profile projects that have more down-the-road benefit. Are there bad incentive deals? Absolutely. But, yeah.
Well, somebody, when I was criticizing somebody, they said, look, DG, this isn't the heart of it. These are just the little coupons to get people's attention.
Yes.
To come see what our real strengths are. This is not the real. But look, we've just gotten started.
I won't change anybody's mind on this issue. I've never seen anybody's mind change on this issue at all.
My mind's wide open.
There you go.
But there are all kinds of things that because of this discussion, I feel to learn from you. And so I just got to say, Ted Abernathy, thanks for introducing us to the complexities of economic development in the southern region. And for coming back to visit us, and I hope you'll do it again sometime soon.
Our best friends still live in Chapel Hill. We're over here often, so glad to be here, and look forward to coming back and visiting with you again.
Well, thanks to Ted Abernathy, who's one of our great friends and former neighbors, and who now is the executive director of the Southern Growth Policy Board. Thanks, Ted Abernathy, for visiting.
Go Heels.
Thanks, y'all, for listening. Yeah, thanks for listening. It's been D.G. Martin, who's talking.